Welcome to the Answer is Yes podcast, where we interview some of the most interesting people that have said yes to opportunities in their life. We hope that through these stories, you can learn to create your own destiny by saying yes along the way. Join us as we explore the new series covering topics such as passion, integrity, and hard work. I'm your host, Jim Riley, and I hope you enjoy these interviews as much as I do. I believe that everyone has an important message worth hearing. Hello and welcome back to the show. You know, last week I had Lucas Root on the line, and he was great because he talked about getting organized in your business, you know, and preparing your day. I show up on the show today with my t-shirt on, realizing, hey, I didn't prepare for the day. I obviously didn't listen to Lucas last week, so I'm going to go back and listen to his show, get my act together. But in the meantime, I've got Jeff Gibbard on the line today. Good morning. How you doing?
What's up, man? Good morning.
Hey, congratulations. You got a new baby in the house. I just love that.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it too. So far, he's been good. I'm hoping that he just chills in the background while we're doing our thing.
What a responsibility, you know, raising little ones. I've got a 6 and 8 year old at my house, and it just you watch the news or you read your books or you think about your whole life. It's like, wow, I've got to teach these kids everything I can in a short window, and I want to do a really good job of it.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, the responsibility to guide them through life and not control them and to let them develop and flourish into who they're going to be rather than kind of setting their life path for them while they're like, you know, still just out of the womb. It's tough because I feel like all of us as parents, we kind of think back to like what our parents did and what we would have liked and what we feel like were missed opportunities. And then we're like, oh, well, when I have kids, I'm going to X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember to like not grip the reins too tight, because that's partly what I think all of us look back on. And our regrets of our own parents are probably from the times that they were gripping too tight and we wanted to go in a different direction. So I just try and remind myself to like take a deep breath and try and let them develop into the people that they're going to be. But guide them with good values.
Yeah, as a coach myself, like you, you know, I'm trying not to be, you know, the everyday, all day coach. Like, you know, they get up to, gosh, you look beautiful today, honey. You're going to succeed. And I'm like, that's gonna wear thin pretty soon.
Start asking him all the coaching questions. Great. And what else? Great. And what's really at stake for you in that right now?
Right.
I'm two.
What chapter of Think and Grow Rich are you on this week?
Exactly.
I know, right? You just learned to read. And by the way, every adult that has children, you know, grown out of the house says, make sure you pay attention. It goes by fast. So no pressure that I'm paying attention every day.
Oh yeah, totally. With having a 2-year-old and now this newborn, it's like, it feels like, oh, great. Now we're just starting over. Like I have this potato. He doesn't do anything. But then I realized how fast that potato that we just had turned into this 2-year-old who's like vivacious and like loving and sweet and really funny and all that stuff. And it happened in a blink of an eye. And granted, it did happen through like the beginning of the pandemic. My daughter was born. Mm-hmm. So like we were in those pandemic days. So everything was just like time was dilated in some odd way.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. So, you know, what I love about this conversation is that this is just real life. This is everyday entrepreneurs talking about their real life situations. And I think oftentimes people look at us, go, wow, they've got it all figured out. You know, they're successful. They've got their podcast. They've got their book out. You know, I wish I could do that, but I've got this going on over here. Well, look, we got the same real life activities going on. You know, you've got baby in the background. I've got animals to feed this morning, and we managed to pull it all together. And Jeff, I want to talk about some of your strategy, your new book, and the things that you're doing currently. But can you give us a little background on who you are and where you came from?
Sure. So I'm a 42-year-old ADHD, Enneagram 8 sort of diehard entrepreneur. I'm psychologically unemployable. I grew up in a household where I was very strongly encouraged to try and find something that I would love to do in my career, so that never felt like work. That was always the message my father kind of hammered home for me. So my whole life is just a pursuit of chasing passions and looking for things that I would really enjoy doing. And that was really not, that was not a great ride for a lot of years, because doing that sets you up for a lot of failure, a lot of setback, a lot of heartbreak, because it's just a lot easier, especially financially and like having a good lifestyle, to get a job where you're compensated well. But that was never my gig. And I was never happy at any job I was ever at. So I basically have, you know, if you look at my story over the last 15 years, it has just been one pursuit of taking my passion and my purpose and turning it into things that I can you know, monetized, but also that I can do work that doesn't feel like work. Mm-hmm. So I had an agency for 7 years called True Voice Media. It was a social media marketing agency, did that for 7 years, got bought out. I was there for a year and a half. And then after that, I took off and decided I wanted to do a completely different career path. And I really was interested in leadership and in culture, and most importantly, in superheroes. I really wanted to figure out how to take my superpower of helping people recognize their unique abilities and their strengths, and helping more people to amplify those so they can go and make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's the long and short of kind of how we got here. I do a gajillion different things, kind of as you gently alluded to, but, you know, a podcaster, wrote a book, and I have a bunch of different businesses that I'm currently running. But as you mentioned, it's real life. It's not like, you know, that only encapsulates the highlights of it all, but there's all the stuff that's in between that, trying to make it all happen.
Yeah. Not to mention taking care of yourself and being healthy and all those other things and being there for Absolutely. Your spouse. You know, I like to tell people, cause they're always looking for that secret pill, you know, to succeed overnight. I said, look, life is hard. You know, business is hard. Being an entrepreneur is hard, but that's the fun part of it, right? You get to the other side of that hard work. You're like, wow, look what I did over this period of time. And while I was doing that, I was raising these wonderful kids and managing my household and my beautiful relationship. But it's hard, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember exactly what the there's a tweet that gets passed around a lot, but it's like choose your hard or choose your stress. Like every once in a while, my dad would see me, we'd be video chatting, and he's like, oh, you look so stressed. And I'd be like, that'd be stress no matter what I'm doing. Like there's always going to be stress in life. And it's just about choosing the stress that feels best to you, that works with your lifestyle, that you feel like you can best manage. So yeah, sometimes I'm working, you know, long hours, late hours, trying to get the things done that are important to me, but I'd rather be doing that than doing those same late long hours for somebody else. So I found the thing that works for me. And I mean, like I work a 4-day work week. So I don't know any companies that are like largely allowing for that. And when I decided it was time to take off for paternity leave, there's no policy. I made the policy. I said, hey, I'm taking off. Right. So that's the important stuff, I think, is like being able to make those choices.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. My mom does that to me all the time too. She's like, you look tired. You look like you're exhausted. You look like you got too much going on. Mom, I made those choices. You know, I raced competitive Spartan. I took a couple years off because of COVID as well. But, you know, she was always like, gosh, aren't you exhausted? Yes, but I've made that choice. And I think that sometimes people want us to be stressed so that they have their own excuse to not do what we're doing. Do you find that?
Yeah. You know, I definitely think that some people just really are not cut out for this type of lifestyle, mm-hmm. in the same way that I'm really not cut out to work at a job. And I just think that there's something about our unique makeups as people, like where we are on the neurodiversity scale, where we are in terms of the influences we had growing up, what we feel jazzed about and when we get rewarded for, where are the things that are the stress that we can work through. So I think that there is a certain unique makeup that allows for people to do what certain types of entrepreneurs do. On the other side, I do think that there is always going to be people looking for an excuse not to do the thing. And I mean, in the same way that like I could work out this morning,
yeah,
but I didn't,
yeah,
because I was like, well, I don't know if I have the time for it. And the truth is, I don't ever really want to work out. I know I should, but it's that same sort of thing. So I think when people look at the entrepreneurial life and they see that we're stressed, they're like, oh, well, that I could never do that because of that. I think it could fall into that sort of like, I don't feel like working out thing. It also could fall into the, like, they're just really not cut out for this life in the way that I'm not cut out for that life.
Right. Right. Makes a lot of sense. I was listening to Andy Frisella, who I listen to a lot. I love his podcast, but he was talking about, look, even if you choose to be homeless, you know, get free money from the state, it's still hard. You know, you're living on a street, you know, so
choose your hard. They say it's really expensive to be poor. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, whatever your heart is, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, exactly. I want to go back to your social media company just because it's intriguing for our listeners to find out, you know, somebody started something, then they choose to exit from it. You know, at what point did you decide, hey, I need to move on? And is that how the exit happened? Or did somebody go, hey, I really like your company, we want to buy it. And then you're like, okay, good time to exit.
It was extremely fortuitous the way it all played out. So here's the long and short story of it, is that I started the company because I wanted to change the world. Mm-hmm. I really believed when social media was hitting its stride. I graduated my MBA in 2008 and I saw this thing called social media bubbling up. And I was like, this is it. This is people. It's technology. It flattens things and democratizes the world in a way that I think is going to allow us to come closer together, bridge our divides and build a better world together. I was like hopelessly naive about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I got into it and I decided that that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be part of the pioneers in helping to forge this new world. So fast forward, you know, I started my company in 2011, and fast forward 7 years, I was starting to get really burned out about one, the entrepreneurial life. You know, I had been, you know, the company kept growing, but I kept making around the same amount of money. Mm-hmm. And it was a constant, you know, fight to find new clients. So like, it was not easy, even though the company was, you know, well-reviewed, you know, awarded in some cases, like we did good work and great clients and all that. It was exhausting. So I'm getting to like the end of this time. And actually somebody who I was friends with at the time had a digital marketing agency, SEO, paid search. And he was like, hey, what do you think about joining forces? And I was just so tired of hustling and fighting and working long hours that the idea of joining a larger company, getting a salary, getting ownership in a larger thing seemed really appealing. So I took that opportunity because I was like, I don't know how else I'm going to get out of this thing. And I'm getting sour on social media. I started to see what was happening. This was around 2017, 2018 that the exit was happening. I sold at the end of 2017. And I had seen that social media just started to become this toxic, horrible place. And I didn't want to be a part of it. I felt like a Philip Morris executive. Like I had been selling cigarettes to kids. So I just wanted out. And I thought, well, I could broaden and go bigger digital marketing because my stuff touched on a lot of that anyway. So I was there for about a year and a half and it was just not a good fit. So we parted ways. And after we parted ways, I said, you know, I could lean on the experience I have, the way people know me. I could keep being a social media guy, or I could take a little bit of time off and explore my heart and figure out what am I about now? Mm-hmm. Like, what did I learn from this that revealed the new direction? And I got to credit my wife because she's the one who said, like, maybe you should do something with superheroes. And I was like, no one's going to take that seriously. Superheroes? This is business.
Yeah.
Thank you for your suggestion. I went and I actually talked with a bunch of friends. And that was when, through all those conversations, it kept coming back to, you know, that's your superpower. I mean, you help people find their superpowers. Oh, it's like, you know, you're like superhuman in this one way. So that's kind of what revealed all of that. But I exited in a totally fortuitous way. It just showed up on my doorstep and I had the good sense to your point, say yes to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate your honesty too, as the owner of that company. Like you said, you know, you weren't really making any more, but the company was doing well. I think it's a misconception when people look at leaders or owners of their own businesses that they're just crushing it. You know, there's sacrifices to be made to have a successful company. And oftentimes that comes from the owner's pocketbook, you know, and if you're a good leader, you're making sure that your employees are taken care of and you're the last one to get paid. You know, and I just think that people miss out on that, you know, that truth or that reality of having a business.
Yeah. And I also would say the big truth that I would say about running your own business that people just do is like managing the money of your business is among the hardest things that you will ever have to deal with in terms of cash flow, money in, money out, paying your people, paying yourself last, as you said, the different expenses that just somehow start to pile up. Like, I didn't know I had 25 software licenses. It's like, you don't think about the economics of it. And granted, there's a lot of businesses where the owners are horrible and they're taking advantage of their people. And there's equally many, if not more, businesses that are struggling, hustling, trying to pay their people well. No one's getting paid well. Everybody's stressed out, but you're all trying to do good work kind of in the trenches together. But just the money just isn't there because that's just what it is. It's a competitive world out there. And sometimes there's just not enough to go around. Or maybe there is, but you just haven't figured out how to capitalize on it.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't want to detract people from having their own businesses and enjoying, because there's so many fruits of that labor. At the end of the day, it's not all about money. It's about enjoying what you're doing and being passionate about it. And oftentimes that's far more rewarding than the check that you can get. I just like the reality and the opportunity to discuss the reality of owning an own business and how challenging it can be.
I think to your point, I don't think anything underscores that it's worth it more than talking about all of this stuff and saying, I would never do anything else.
Yeah.
Like I literally would never do all of the struggles, compile them, you know, compound them. I would still do this before I got any job, even a super well-paying job. The dollar number somebody would have to offer me to take a job at this point is astronomically stupid numbers. And I would tell them flat out, the most you're going to get out of me is a year and a half.
Yeah.
After that, I'm like, I'm just out. Right. So I think to your point, like talking about all of the realness of it should underscore how worth it this is. If it's for you, it's not for everyone again, but if it's for you, I would take every single one of the problems that come with entrepreneurship over having a job, because to your point, I find money to be the least interesting part of what I do. And like, I love talking about sales. One thing all my coaching and consulting clients know is that if you're looking for someone to raise your prices, it's me. Like, I'm the guy that's going to figure out how to continually position you up market and get you more money. That's a thing I do. It's a thing I do for myself. I believe if you're good at what you do, you should get paid for it. That said, I think money is the least interesting part of anything I do. Everything I do is about something else besides money. Money is just a factor of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of like emails, a factor. Like, money is a factor. I got to email to talk to you. I got to probably put you on my calendar, but like, none of that is part of why I do what I do.
Yeah. And just to echo what you said, I was telling my wife a few weeks ago, God, I can't believe I haven't worked for somebody else for over 15 years now. I couldn't even imagine going back into that life. And by the way, I worked for the Kettle One Vodka Corporation, owned by a private family in Holland. We had the thick carpet, the beautiful desk, all the big budgets. The number they'd have to give me to come back, and even with that number, I'd say, well, I want to come and go as I please.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's another thing. Like, when you taste that freedom of making your own choices, like, again, some people need the structure. If you were to be at what time, whatever. Me, that, like, that just suffocates me.
Yeah.
But when you taste that and that's for you, there's just no going back to that. Like, you have to be at the office at 9, or you have to be at the office at 8, or you have to this, that, or the other thing. Like, don't tell me what to do. I do what I want. And it works fine. Just let me be me. Trust me, it'll go well.
Yeah. Okay. Let's transition into this superhero. Okay. I know we've talked about it, but my guests are going, what does he mean by this superhero? So let's talk about that and what the meaning of that is.
Yeah, sure. So when I left the last agency and I took that time off, I thought, okay, what do I want to do? And I came up with this idea of an organization, a company called the Superhero Institute. And the idea was to give people the tools to unlock their capabilities, to unlock their potential, and to do the things that they want to do in life. And I came up with a framework for how to do that. And that developed into a coaching certification program that I'm currently working on, you know, the videos and all of the online training for. So the idea is to become a certified superhero coach. So the Superhero Institute is my endeavor. It's one of my multiple endeavors to help create more superheroes in the world. So where does that all come from? So I guess it comes from the idea, especially out of the backlash when I mentioned of what I saw on social media, is that I feel like we have a lot of divisiveness out there. There's a lot of problems that are going out in the world. And as a huge fan of superheroes for my entire life, I think what we need in the world is more superheroes. And to me, that's people that are going out there and they're trying to, you know, live the responsibility that they have, you know, have the courage to go out there and make a difference, have the resilience to keep getting back up. All of the sorts of things that superheroes do. We need more of those people out there, and we need them focused on making the world a better place. So if I can empower people with the skills to do whatever it is that they want to be able to go and do, and then point them in the direction, you know, towards making the world a better place, more equitable, kinder, safer. If I can do that, then I'll have made my tiny dent in the universe. Hmm. Now, that is just one sort of way that manifests. You know, the Superhero Institute is one outlet for that. But really, my brand, if you look across everything that I'm doing, I've got Shareable FM, which is the Shareable Podcast Network. So it's a place to empower podcasters. I've got my book. If you look across everything, my coaching, my consulting, my speaking, all of it factors into this mission of making a world with more superheroes, to create a kinder, safer, more equitable world. It exists across everything. So the superhero thing really is just the foundation on which I build any idea that I'm now doing. If I have a new business idea, the core of it has to come back to how do I empower people to do the things that they need to do in life, and then point them towards using those abilities and gifts towards making the world a better place. Mm. That's basically where it all kind of comes together. And to be clear, there is a little bit of a, how should I put this? Sort of like a moral imperative that I kind of include into that. So I kind of define what I believe making the world a better place is into all of these things. And again, that's the kinder, safer, more equitable part. So there's a certain set of values that I think you have to align with for any of my stuff to make sense.
Yeah. I was going to ask, and this show, I never bring up politics, and I'm not going to really do that now, but I'm just curious. Right now, it seems like people are so defined on what they think is going to make the world a better place, right? Because we're so polarized based on what side of the fence you're on from a political perspective. How do you achieve your agenda without that confrontation in the middle?
Well, so I'm going to turn it around and say that I think that throughout history, all throughout every civilization, it's been a conversation from a conversation to a war over what is the best way to structure society and human civilization, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's just been what our history is. So I think that it's healthy for us to have different sets of ideas of how that happens. I think the problem that we're currently running into is how that's happening, how we're meeting in the middle to discuss those things and finding a way where it works for everyone. And I think it's become more of like warring factions. And I think part of the idea, part of the reason why that's happened is that, and this happens under conditions of fear and uncertainty, is that we look for our group and we essentially label our group and this group good, that group bad. And it becomes more about, it's almost like team sports, right? Like I'm an Eagles guy. So if you're a Cowboys fan, like we're literally never going to get along when it comes to football. Like we're just always going to be warring factions.
Right.
But we can agree that we like football, right? So I think the ultimate idea is how do we get back to talking about the ideas and how do we make sure that we're aligned around the same problem that we're trying to solve? So I heard someone say this, I can't remember where it was, like on a TikTok, I think, but it really stuck out to me. Someone said, when we're doing this, it can't be you versus me. It has to be you and me versus the problem, right? So I think the problem is that we've turned our attention towards one another and we're battling in a headlock or a head-to-head battle over whose idea is the right one versus how can we come together to solve a particular problem. Mm-hmm. So I guess to your point, I don't think I can solve politics. If I could, I would. But I do think that the problem is not that we have politics or that we have competing ideas. I think that's a good thing. I think the problem is how those ideas express. And I think if you have any of those ideas that are sort of an existential threat to someone else's ability to live a happy, healthy, safe life, that's the problem, really, as I see it. But if we have a situation where these two ideas can coexist and have a society that works for everyone, that generally doesn't seem to be a problem. So when we take that into the workplace, I'm looking for the same sorts of things. I'm looking for how can we structure workplaces so that everyone has a seat at the table, everyone feels included. I do a lot of work on neuroinclusivity because I have ADHD and one of my business partners, she's neurotypical. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is how we work so well together is our open communication and understanding of our differences. Whereas in a lot of, I think a lot of the reason why I can't work for anyone is I have work trauma from being excluded based on the way that my brain naturally works. I've felt like an other or weird or different, or I don't fit, or I don't this, or I don't that, rather than taking advantage of the abilities that I have and accepting the disabilities or the parts that are just don't fit into that mold. So I think when we find those places where we can communicate about our differences and allow for each other and create spaces that allow for each other, I think that's what we're after, right? Allow and embrace, really.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like social media played a role in kind of that divide, my team versus that team? I mean, I do.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think social media, so again, at the beginning, I thought that social media would do the exact opposite of what it did. I thought that it would provide a neutral playing ground for us to come together and see past our differences to talk about ideas and to look towards a better future.
Yeah.
Because I think as a person, I tend to think like we're all humanity. Let's figure out how humanity can advance together in a way that works for everyone. That's how I think. So I think sometimes foolishly, I imagine that everyone thinks that way, but I don't think that's actually the truth. And when I look at it, social media, what I see is the retreat to behind a keyboard has made us less empathetic. You and I are talking right now. I have no idea what your political views are, but I'd imagine if we're speaking face-to-face and talking politics, even just after a little, I know you don't talk politics, but even if we were, I think seeing face-to-face, reading each other's body languages, seeing each other as human beings, we could have completely different views. And I think that we could probably arrive at a reasonable conversation if we were on opposite sides.
Sure.
I think the problem is that if we shut off our cameras right now, we shut off our mics and we are right behind the keyboards, if we had opposing views, all of a sudden you're an avatar of evil if you're on the other side from me.
Yeah.
And I think social media has exacerbated that, because not only do you have people, but now you're muddying the waters with bots. You're muddying the waters with trolls. You're muddying the water with people who are not actually there for an honest, good faith discussion about some of these things. You have people that are just there to see the world burn. So I do think that social media has become a problem. And I think partly I lay a lot of the responsibility on each of us individually, but I think a big part of the responsibility comes out the incentives of the social media algorithms and what they promote and what they put out there, because the more contentious, the more outrageous everything is, the more, you know, toxic it is, the more that gets amplified, because that gets engagement. We gravitate towards that stuff because there's probably something in our biological makeup that causes us to look at that for our fight or flight response. And I do think social media has exacerbated it in a way that societies that didn't have that, or communities that don't have that, just don't have to deal with, because you still have to see each other face to face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, back when I was a kid, you know, you say some of the things in person that they're saying online, you're going to get punched in the face. You know, we don't get that anymore, right? Like you said, keyboard warriors.
Yeah. And like, I think on the one hand, I think that there's a certain value to that. On the other side, I think, you know, the violence over ideas, and I'm not totally opposed to violence as an idea. I just mean, you know, the saying some things rude and getting punched in the face, I think that's good that that's there, but that also favors a certain type of person that has the power in that situation, the stronger person, right? The weaker person, doesn't matter if they're saying the right thing or the wrong thing, they still get beat up.
Yeah.
So I'm about ideas, and I'm about ideas that create a world that is kinder, safer, more equitable, and allows for everyone to coexist and be themselves. I think that's the big thing, is it's really about identity for me, is that, you know, as a neurodivergent, 42-year-old cisgendered dude, I want to be who I want to be. I want to work the way I want to work. And I think everybody should have that same kind of freedom to say, here's who I am, here's what I need, here's how I am, here's who I want to associate with. And that should be available to them.
I love that. And I wish, you know, more people paid attention to your principles and the superhero mentality. You know, my pastor wrapped it up pretty good this weekend. You know, you're always looking for your pastor to give you the thing that gets you riled up, you know, and he says, look, I'm not going to stand up here and bash any politician or any. He goes, because, you know, the word of God says we don't do that, right? And I loved his point, because it's exactly what you're saying, is let's just be better humans, you know? Let's be that superhero. Let's not take an opportunity to say something negative about somebody. It's always a good reminder. So thank you for that. And I know we got off topic of some of the things that you're great at and some of the things you do.
Everything's on topic for me, man. I'm about it. Let's do it.
Right? Let's cover your book real quick before we run out of time here. You know, what's in the book and what people can expect from that.
Yeah, well, I got a good segue for you. I'll make a really elegant segue from the superhero stuff into the book, which is that there's a concept in my book, and I'll talk about this concept, and then I'll kind of expand out. I'll zoom out a bit to talk about what it's about. But there's a concept in the book that I call sitting on the same side of the table, mm-hmm. and it's a process for having better conversations with people. And it's a you and me versus the problem sort of framework, right? Like, so how do we have powerful conversations with them? Let's say you have somebody at work and they're a problem. How do you have a conversation with them that's powerful and leaves them feeling in a better place than when you started, right? So the framework works like this. You got to start by understanding what that person's goals are and setting those goals out right at the beginning. Like, here's my goal for this conversation, and I want to get your consent to have this conversation, right? So you and me are having a conversation, Jim, and something you did at work bothered me. I say, hey, Jim, I'd love to have a conversation with you because I want you and I to get aligned again. We had a weird interaction last week, and I want your consent for us to have this conversation so we can work through that. At the end of this, I want us to be on the same page and moving forward powerfully. You cool with that? And you're like, yeah, I'm good with it, right? Start with understanding the goals. Then the next thing you got to do is just shut up. Just listen to the other person. So tell me, what do you think happened last week, right? And then you just let that person talk. Mm-hmm. Let them tell you their perspective. This is the first step in empathy, is letting somebody else tell you their side of it, letting them give you their perspective so that you can try to see through their eyes. And then following up that listening, really paired with it, is engaging your curiosity. You're a podcast host. You understand what this is. You have that little tickle in your brain. Tell me more about that. You said this thing. What did you mean by that? I get it. Okay. What about that part? You said that part. Tell me more about that. Right? You're also a coach. You do the same thing. You ask a lot of questions. You want to get really clear, right? So beginning is you're setting your goals. You're then going to listen to their point of view. You're going to ask questions and be really curious about it. Great. Once you get to that, then you need to validate that point of view. And I think this is where a lot of things fall apart in the world in general. We move right to judging it. Well, I think you're wrong about this and blah, 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 right? You're wrong because of this, that, and the other thing. That's not a powerful conversation. The conversation just stopped. Now you're defensive.
Right.
Instead, I'm going to validate it. Hey, I heard everything that you said, and I understand that you felt this way because I said this and that and the other thing. And I can totally understand why you felt that way, yada, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But you want to validate. Don't put somebody on the defensive. You want to validate their perspective because whatever they're feeling, whether it seems ridiculous to you or not, is real to them, right? That's sitting on the same side of the table as someone. You're facing the same direction, looking towards a solution together. So after you validate them, then you want to align on your perspective, their perspective, and try and figure out where that overlap is. That's, again, you and me versus the problem. So I say, hey, I understood you said that. I didn't mean it that way. I meant it in this way. And I think one thing that we need to align on as two individuals is that I need to make sure that I'm clarifying more the context of what I'm trying to say, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Can we agree to that? And let's, you know, decide to move forward on that powerfully. And you're like, yeah, okay. And then at the end, you close the loop. You say, great, so what we talked about is this, that, and the other thing, and I'm going to try to do this more, and you're going to try and do that more. Are we all on the same page? Did I miss anything? And they're like, nope, that's great. So that's the framework of sitting on the same side of the table. And it's part of my book, The Lovable Leader, which is about creating better teams with kindness, trust, and respect. And the three pillars of lovable leadership are care, trust, and safe travels. The idea is you want to create environments where there's care amongst everyone on the team, where there's trust amongst everyone on the team, and where when you're pursuing big goals, the travels part, you're trying to get to a big destination, you want to make sure it's safe on the way there. And if you can just adhere to those three principles, and the book goes into the whole thing, it's for new managers, so that if you've never managed people, you've got all the skills you need, including goal setting and strategy, et cetera. But this sitting on the same side of the table is probably the most important concept in the book, which is why I made two chairs sitting on the same direction, the cover of the book, because I'm really trying to help people create work environments where everyone feels seen, everyone feels heard, and there's more care and trust and safety amongst everyone on the team.
I love it. I'm teaching a class right now in high school. It's an entrepreneur class. And these are the kinds of skills that they're not being taught in school. Yeah. You know, and I'm going to get the book and I'm going to read through it and I'm going to pull from it. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to teach the kids what you're talking about because it is so important. You know, and as you're talking and I'm listening to you, I'm like, yeah, that, you know, of course that makes sense. And hopefully I'm that type of leader and have been that type of leader. If I'm not, it's a good reminder. Same for anybody listening. Could you imagine, and I think this goes back to your mission statement, let's make the world a better place. Could you imagine if we applied that principle across the board? Could you imagine what social media would look like right now if people applied that principle? You know, I understand you have this point of view. I feel this way. You know, what happened to agree to disagree, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, sometimes it's healthy to agree to disagree as long as we can have sort of a common endpoint there. But I think some of the agree to disagree has unfortunately become, you know, some people saying let's agree to disagree when what they're disagreeing about is somebody's fundamental rights to exist in their way. So when that is the case, then I'm like, nah, not about that. But I agree with you. I think sometimes there is an opportunity for us to say we don't actually have to agree on everything. And that's why I specifically chose the word align there rather than agree. We don't have to agree on everything. We just have to align on what the outcome is going to be that we're after. And it's funny you brought up about like what they're not teaching in school. I give a talk where I talk about the three things I learned in my MBA. And I'll tell you what those three things are, real simple. The first is that money is a language of business. The second is that economics is important in everything. And by economics, I mean the study of scarcity, how we make decisions under constraints. And then the third thing is that everyone has a role. If you understand those three things, I just saved you $60,000 or more on an MBA. That is literally what I think are the three most important things I learned in the MBA. Because if you understand that everything you're doing in business, you just have to talk through the language of money. Money is what we're talking about in everything. Mm-hmm. Everything has to come back to money made or money lost. And that economics, you have to understand that every decision is about where do we allocate our time? Where do we allocate our money? Where do we allocate our passion? Where do we allocate our talent? So economics, the study of scarcity and how we allocate scarce resources. And then the third thing is everyone has a role. And this is, I think companies get this wrong because you feel like, oh, well, you have to fit into this box. Well, here's what happened. In my MBA, I needed help with all my accounting homework because that's not my jam.
Right.
The So for the first half of the entire MBA, I was like, I'm a loser. I suck at this whole MBA thing. I should probably just drop out. I'm not good at this. Then comes to the second half, and we all of a sudden have to give a presentation. The people that were helping me with my accounting homework all of a sudden went catatonic about talking in front of people. And I was like, seriously, that's it? That's your thing that you're worried about? I could talk in front of people. I'll talk in front of people all day. And that's when I realized I don't have to be good at everything. I have to be good at what I'm good at. They have to be good at what they're good at. And we have to find a way to work together to accomplish big, amazing things. Mm. Everyone has a role. Find your role and live into that role and stop making people try to fit into a role that's not theirs.
Yeah. Jeff, I could probably talk to you all day. I think we have more in common than not because I suck at accounting.
That's why there are bookkeepers in the world and accountants. You know,
that's right. I learned how to hire the right ones. Actually, I got myself caught in a bind because I had a good one, lost him overnight, unforeseen circumstances, and I scrambled for 6 months to recoup.
That is
right?
Brutal.
Oh, let me tell you, my new CPA, she's like, "What happened?" I'm like, "Trust me." I'm with you. Hey, where can people find you? Get more information. Can they buy the book? Because I just love where your head's at and what you're teaching and what you're all about.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me on, man. It's really fun to talk with you. I agree. I could probably talk to you for hours. I love doing this sort of thing. And nothing's off topic, as I said. I have conversations about absolutely everything. So finding me is easy. I used to give out like 20 web addresses. I was like, well, if you want to find me here. So I actually changed it and I just made it easy. If you just go to jgibbard.com, jgibbard.com, that's basically a menu to everything I do. So if you want to find out the projects I'm working on non-professionally, like just my fun side stuff, it's there. If you want to find the products I sell, go there. If you want to look at my content, it's there. So everything's at that one web address. It just links to everything. It's a big menu. So that's that. Buying the book, if you go to jgibbard.com, you'll find links to that, but you can also find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, anywhere online books are sold. It's available in Kindle. It's available in paperback. I'm going to be recording the audiobook very soon because I have a lovely voice. And I hope people pick it up. I put 5 years of work into it, which a story for another time, but it actually only took me 28 days to write the book, but it took 5 years to do it because I would write in these big binges rather than like consistently. But it's all of my heart and soul. I've never been more proud of a professional accomplishment than I am about my book. So I really do hope people go and check it out and maybe walk away with at least one thing in it. If you walk away with one thing, the book will have been worth it, but it's for new managers. If you're a new manager listening, please go and get it. It's the book that I wish I had as a new manager. It's the book that my wife wishes she had as a new manager. And I know lots of people that feel the same. It's really tailored towards you if you're in that how do I manage people role. Like, I'm good at a thing, but I'm not good at managing people. That's the book for you.
Jeff, I appreciate that. And if you're listening, I've recorded over 300 plus shows to date. This message today is probably one of the more important messages that you'll hear. I would say it's probably in the 1% of all the shows I've had, because if you understand what Jeff is talking about and the importance of being that superhero person for the reasons that he outlined, you'll get it. Your life will be different. It'll be changed. It'll be better. And you'll realize how much of an effect you'll have on the people around you. And I don't say that lightly. You know, I'm sitting here listening, and I really have interviewed a lot of people outside of this podcast too. And I'm in my mid-50s. I got a couple kids. You know, you really understand what's important in life. And the things that we talked about today, if you get anything out of any podcast, the message today is one of those. And I would encourage you to get the book, whether you're a leader or not, just so you can get a little bit more of what Jeff's saying. And by the way, if you do listen to my shows, you know I don't say this often. I've had a lot of great guests, but in terms of messaging and alignment with where and what we need right now as a society, this is it. So, Jeff, thank you so much for this talk today and being on the show. And I look forward to getting together with you again one day and talking some more.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening to today's show. It is my pleasure and honor to interview all of the guests that have been on the Answer Is Yes podcast. If you have enjoyed the show, please go on iTunes and subscribe, give a rating, or simply tell a friend about the show. We also believe in the message of our guests and the positive influence of their stories. As my own mentor and coach, David Meltzer, has taught me, spend some time every day thinking and writing about the things in your own life that you have more than enough of. You will find out how blessed we really are. Please visit my website, livelifedriven.com, for the latest updates about me and what I'm doing, Plus, I post a monthly blog about the many topics on this show. This podcast can also be found there. As I learned early on in life, what you believe is what you will achieve. Thanks, Mark Victor Hansen. And thank you, and have a great week.